Miriam Taves grew up in a fundamentalist Mennonite community in a small town in Manitoba, Canada. But she dreamed of living in Greenwich Village, which represented everything her town was not. Her new novel, A Complicated Kindness, is based on her experiences as a teenager. Reviewing it in the Toronto Star, Noah Richler described it as a truly wonderful novel. He wrote, "Taves recreates the stultifying world of an exasperated Mennonite teenager in a small town where nothing happens with mesmerizing authenticity." Here's a short reading from the beginning of the novel.
"People here just can't wait to die, it seems. It's the main event. The only reason we're not all snuffed at birth is because that would reduce our suffering by a lifetime. My guidance counselor has suggested to me that I change my attitude about this place and learn to love it. But I do, I told her. Oh, that's rich, she said. That's rich. We're Mennonites. As far as I know, we're the most embarrassing subsect of people to belong to if you're a teenager. 500 years ago in Europe, a man named Menno Simon set off to do his own peculiar religious thing, and he and his followers were beaten up and killed or forced to conform all over Holland, Poland, and Russia until they, at least some of them, finally landed right here where I sit. Ironically, they named this place East Village, which, I have learned, is the name of the area in New York City that I would most love to inhabit."
That's Miriam Taves reading from her new novel, A Complicated Kindness. Miriam, what is the preoccupation with death that you describe in this novel? You're right, your character says, "When we were little, my sister and I would sit in the darkened dining room of my grandmother's farmhouse, listening to the funeral announcements. They came on after supper on the local radio station we were allowed to listen to, because the elders knew that it was better for little children to listen to the names of dead people being read out in a terrifying monotone than the Beatles singing 'All We Need Is Love.'" Was there a radio program like that that you listened to?
Yeah, there was, actually. That part is something that I took straight from my own life. My parents would listen to the death announcements, you know. Not sure if it was every day or every week, because there was always somebody that they, you know, they would have known, somebody who had died, some older man or woman. And so, you know, it was a small community. So this was something that they listened to with great interest. And you know, because I was there, I would hear it too. But that would, and, you know, and certainly, yeah, we weren't listening to, you know, we weren't listening to the Beatles or any pop or rock and roll, really, when I was younger. When I got older and when my sister was older too, when we became teenagers, you know, we acquired records and stuff like that. But before that, yeah, basically the radio that we listened to would have been death announcements.
What were some of the things that were banned in your community?
It wasn't so much that it was that things were formally banned, but certainly, you know, the whole gamut of drinking, smoking, dancing was strictly forbidden. Playing cards, gambling, you know, and with some of the more conservative congregations, because there are different degrees of conservatism within the Mennonite church, but the very conservative congregations, you know, would have banned, for instance, fancy appliances in the home, or, you know, a soft top car, for instance, you know, just fanciness that could be portrayed by others as vanity and worldliness. You know, those were the things that Mennonites were expected to stay away from.
Did you rebel against it?
You know, I came from quite a tolerant, sort of liberal Mennonite home. My family was quite tolerant and liberal, and you know, didn't come down hard on me for much of anything at all. But I grew up in a very conservative Mennonite community, and so I saw that type of rebellion. I think I did typical stuff, you know, just drinking, smoking, whatever it was. But I wasn't full of anger. I wasn't full of rage, and I didn't feel that I was being crushed in the same way that maybe my characters might feel, or that I've seen, you know, around me.
You left your community when you were 18.
Mm-hmm.
You say that one of the reasons why you needed to leave is that you wanted to write. Could you not have written fiction in this community, do you think?
No, not the type of fiction that I write. Not fiction that would have been critical, you know, of the community, of the power structure, of the sort of oppressiveness of it. I mean, no, I mean, I could have. I wouldn't have been, you know, run out of town or anything, but it would have been very, very difficult to live there. That whole idea of you know, of shunning, which is something that Mennonites, again, the conservative Mennonites still do. They may not call it shunning anymore, but it certainly looks and feels and acts exactly like shunning.
Describe what shunning is.
Well, shunning was a Mennonite thing that, you know, if you broke the laws of the church, you know, which were, and again, these were, again, interpreted sort of subjectively and arbitrarily by, at least as far as I could tell, by the powers that be, by the church elders, by the ministers, by the deacons. Though, you know, adultery, for instance, or, you know, or any number of things, you know, drinking or something, the community would basically shun you, literally. I mean, there would be silence all around. In fact, your own spouse would be expected not to have anything to do with you, not to sleep with you, not to eat with you. You would live in the same home, but there wouldn't be any communication. Essentially, you'd be cut off. You know, you would be isolated, and that's an extremely destructive thing. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, that it's a form of psychological torture, essentially. I mean, that sounds extreme, but I know that, you know, I know the damage that it's done. I know individuals who have been shunned and who are still, you know, kind of, I mean, that's a devastating thing to have happen to you.
Who in your life was shunned?
My great-grandfather was shunned for a period of time for eloping with a 17-year-old girl after his wife died. You know, the children of some of my mom's friends have been shunned for instance, babies born out of wedlock, and then, you know, years and years and years and years later, some of them are forgiven and allowed to, you know, to re-enter the church, and that often means an awful lot to them. Sometimes it doesn't mean anything. Sometimes these people go off and you know, and leave for good and do their own thing, but sometimes they don't. You know, they stay in the community and sort of exist as outsiders.
You make the Mennonite culture sound very unforgiving.
I don't mean to make the Mennonite culture seem unforgiving, because it's not unforgiving in all respects. There are elements that are unforgiving and intolerant and unloving, and there are many, many elements that are exactly the opposite, that are forgiving, that are tolerant, that are loving, that are truly loving. But certainly from what I've experienced, from the characters in my book experience, you know, there is a lot of you know, unforgiving, intolerant attitudes that are destructive and that are unnecessary and that aren't Christian and that, you know, I don't know. It's a difficult, you know, because I mean, I still consider myself to be a Mennonite. My mother's a Mennonite, belongs to a Mennonite church. You know, some of my closest friends are Mennonites. I'm married to a Mennonite. You know, I consider my children to be Mennonite. It's not something that I, you know, that I eschew, you know, or deny or you know, have turned my back on. But it's something that I'm critical of in you know, in certain ways.
Now, where do you live now?
I live in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
In a city or in a small town?
Yeah, it's a city. Yeah, uh-huh. It's a city. It's a half million, over half a million.
And where you were from had how many people?
When I was a kid, about 6,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was some of the most challenging parts of leaving a very homogenous religious community to go into a city?
I was so excited when I left. I moved actually immediately from my hometown, which is called Steinbeck. I moved to Montreal, which, as you probably know, is a very cosmopolitan, you know, large urban center here in Canada, in the east and in Quebec. So I went there directly to study French, actually, which was another thing that was kind of, you know, poo-pooed in my community. A German would have been the language, or Low German, Plattdeutsch, actually. But I wanted to study French, and I wanted to live in Montreal, and it was hard. I mean, I did feel like a bit of a, you know, a nerd, a bit of a dork, a bit of an outsider. I didn't think I was very cool, and I'm sure a lot of other people agreed, you know, and then, you know, eventually, I mean, I'm still, now I've lived in the city for, well, you know, like 20 years, but you know, I still feel like I still miss my hometown. I still think of it fondly. I still think of my childhood, which is a wonderful time in my life. It was very nurturing. I felt very safe. Everybody knew who I was, what church I went to, who my grandparents were, who my parents were, you know, what the part of Russia my you know, specific great grandparents came from. You know, I mean, it was just, and I still miss it, you know, and it's only 40 miles down the road, but I don't have anybody there anymore. My dad died, my mom moved to the city, my sister lives in the city, you know, it's kind of, I have some old aunts who I love dearly, but, you know, don't see very often. I don't know, it kind of lives on in my, you know, in my memory as not that bad a place.
You have three children, all teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Are you bringing them up within the religion?
No, no, not at all. You know, we it's kind of, you know, I mean, how does a Mennonite define him or herself as a Mennonite? It's kind of, you know, I consider myself to be a Mennonite. My husband, I consider him to be a Mennonite, but he doesn't really think of himself as a Mennonite because he's never belonged to any church. And, you know, the kids, because of their last names here in this in this city, everybody knows, you know, what Mennonites are and who Mennonites are and what they're kind of about. And so because of our last name, it's clearly a Mennonite last name. And so they would be considered to be Mennonites. But no, they don't go to a Mennonite church. Again, my mother's is, you know, part of a Mennonite church. And she, you know, she certainly wields a type of influence on them, which is a positive, loving Mennonite thing.
What are some of the values or other aspects of the Mennonite religion that you still really like?
I like the whole idea of community. I like the idea of, you know, large extended families of, you know, I mean, I have over 30 first cousins. So, you know, I mean, I don't even know my second cousins. Second cousins are somebody, you know, that basically within the Mennonite culture aren't even considered really relatives. Just, you know, my parents were second cousins, actually. Mm. Which is kind of funny. You know, one of my best friend is actually my second cousin, but we never think of each other as second cousins because that's so sort of, you know, there are way too many first cousins that count as more immediate family. But no, I miss that. You know, I miss that whole, and to a certain degree, I still have it. You know, I mean, certainly on my mother's side, you know, we'll get together all the cousins and stuff, you know, every few years, and they come from all over, and we'll have a good time. But yeah, so there's that. There's I'm still eating a lot of the Mennonite food. You know, my mom prepares it, I prepare it. What I do miss, something that I do miss, and is the singing. Mennonites are known for their singing, for their a cappella singing in harmony, in four part harmony. It's very moving. You know, I have to stop myself from crying because it's so beautiful to me, and I remember that very fondly.
Your parents were second cousins.
I know it sounds crazy, but it's true. Yeah, my sister and I are reasonably normal.
Are there any taboos against second cousins marrying?
Apparently not. No, there aren't. I mean, nowadays, although I know younger people too who are second cousins married, but no, I don't think there is a taboo. Is there some kind of law against it? There is certainly a taboo against first cousins getting married. I know that.
I guess, you know, it's possible that there could be, like, health issues, like, you know, genetically on health issues when there's, you know, marriage within the extended family like that.
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of interesting. I and my sister-in-law are, we are second cousins. So that's, okay, so my husband's brother's wife and I are second cousins. So that our kids, actually, her kids and my kids are first cousins because their dads are brothers, but they're also third cousins, right? I think because their mom and I are second cousins, which sounds pretty freaky. It's kind of embarrassing to say, but you know, it seems to have all worked out more or less.
Your new novel is set in the kind of community that you grew up in, a small Mennonite community in Canada. Do you want to write about other places, or do you want to keep your writing to the type of community that you're from and that you know so well?
I really want to write about other places. I think it's I really feel that, you know, I've said a lot of what I know, that, you know, your background, the place where you're from and all of that stuff will seep into, you know, it'll seep into your work, you know, forever, right? I mean, it always does. I mean, that's unavoidable. But I definitely want to move on. And I've lived in other places. I've traveled around the world. And you know, I think it's definitely time. And I'm looking forward to writing about other places.
Well, Miriam Taves, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. It was nice. Thanks a lot, Terry.
Miriam Taves' new novel is called A Complicated Kindness.